So as we continue our summer of life and thus relating aspects of Torah to life, we come to one of the most captivating and attention-grabbing aspects of Scripture, and that is vision. Not vision in terms of sight where we are able to physically see, but vision in terms of sight where we are able to see a plan or a path for our lives. Solomon speaks of just such a dynamic. Many translations are framed in this manner. The King James, where there is no vision, the people perish. New King James, where there is no revelation, the people cast off restraint. The NASB, where there is no vision, the people are unrestrained. And then the ASV, where there is no vision, the people cast off restraint. While other versions convey more to vision, and that this vision is not just a human aspect, but a divine aspect. For the complete Jewish Bible, without a prophetic vision, the people throw off all restraint. The tree of life, where there is no divine vision, people cast off restraint. And then the ESV, where there is no prophetic vision, the people cast off restraint. So vision is not just something that is man-made or of human design, but ultimately the vision that's talked about here by Solomon is that of divine nature, that of prophetic nature, that which comes from Adonai. So how are we to understand this verse? Where there is no prophetic guidance or direction from Adonai, the people are unrestrained. That is a measure or condition that keeps someone or something under control or within limits. For Torah is that prophetic and divine utterance that is intended to reveal Adonai's ways to Israel. Yet it has been made known to the world and in many ways is applicable to the world. Over the years, if you have asked me about the Bible, I would tell you that it is specifically about Adonai's relationship with Israel, the Jewish people, and how that relationship impacts the rest of the world. Adonai enables us to see somewhat behind the curtain as to his vision. So this idea of vision comes from God. He has a plan. We're here for a purpose. We're here for a reason. If you've ever asked what the meaning of life is, this is it. You don't have to go to some philosophical guru, amen, some fortune teller to tell you what your purpose in life is. Approximately 2,000 years of history from creation until Abraham is documented in 11 chapters. Most certainly not a comprehensive historical account. Yet there are several world-impacting events recounted. Then from Genesis 12 onward, the focus changes to one individual and his descendants. The next 1,178 chapters reveal immense detail of this relationship. The good, the bad, the ugly, and yes, even the embarrassing. Every aspect of Abraham's family's history is revealed for the world to see, to comment, and even to judge. Consider yourself blessed that your family history is not for the world to see. In some instances, the secrets die with the person. Not the case here. Many chapters and verses specifically focus on Israel and their proximity to the land that Adonai had promised. In Genesis 17, 7 and 8, he says, I am establishing my covenant between me and you, as he says to Abraham, along with your descendants after you, generation after generation, to be as an everlasting covenant, to be God for you and for your descendants after you. I will give you and your descendants after you the land in which you are now foreigners, all the land of Canaan as a permanent possession, and I will be their God. A nation and a people would be confronted and thus challenged in upholding Adonai's standards. Their success and failure could be gauged by their proximity to the land. If Adonai removed them from the land as he said he would, and do so under certain conditions. For in Leviticus 26, verses 14 and 15, but if you will not listen to me and obey all these mitzvot, if you loathe my regulations and reject my rulings in order not to obey all my mitzvot, but cancel my covenant. Notice it's conditional, if. And then down to 31, I will lay waste on your cities and make your sanctuaries desolate, so as not to smell your fragrant aromas. I will desolate the land so that your enemies living in it will be astounded by it. You I will disperse among the nations, and I will draw out the sword in pursuit after you. Your land will be a desolation and your cities a wasteland. Now, keeping in mind, between verses 16 and 30 are all the things that would occur if they did not honor God in his mitzvot and his rulings. And then it comes to this point where expulsion from the land would occur. Think of him as a righteous father punishing his child for the purpose of correction. Proverbs 3:11-12, my son, don't despise Adonai's discipline or resent his reproof. For Adonai corrects those he loves like a father who delights in his son. The purpose of correction, and this isn't going to be as profound as it sounds, is to correct. That is to restore, to make right the action of those whose restraint was not restrained. Thus, these 1,178 chapters and the 187 chapters of Torah are intended to provide restraint. For Adonai reveals through Solomon the connection of the prophetic vision in Torah. For he says, without prophetic vision, the people throw off all restraint, but he who keeps Torah is happy. That of no restraint is lawlessness. Thus, when Adonai reveals his ways, there is restraint. Deuteronomy 29:28. Things which are hidden belong to Adonai, our God, but the things that have been revealed belong to us and our children forever, so that we can observe all the words of this Torah. So what he's revealed is for us, for the purpose of drawing close to him, honoring him, and keeping his word. There is a structure, there is a guidance. Yet even with what is revealed, the people can still act without restraint, ignoring the very guidance of Adonai. We see this in this week's Parsha Devarim, whereby Moses recounts the nation's journey over the last 40 years, a period of time that could have lasted only 11 days, from the exodus of Egypt to the border of the land promised by Adonai, originally to Abraham and his descendants. For in Devarim 1:1-2, these are the words Moses spoke to all Israel on the far side of the Jordan River, in the desert, in the Arava, across from Suf between Paran and Tophel, Levan, Hatzarat, and Dizavah. It is 11 days' journey from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea by way of Mount Seir. The journey that Moses goes into, and in great detail, is similar to that of Isaiah in chapter 1. This is the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem during the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and the kings of Judah. Hear, heaven, listen, earth, for Adonai is speaking. I raised and brought up children, but they rebelled against me. So the very things that Moses is going through on the other side of the desert, Isaiah is also conveying about a rebellious people. For Adonai speaks through Moses, his prophet, and Isaiah, his prophet, about the vision he has for the nation, a rebellious nation that Adonai will correct but not abandon nor destroy. For a promise was made long ago pertaining to a people and a land. Adonai had a vision when he would establish his name upon a single nation. When he says in Numbers 6, Adonai said to Moses, "Speak to Aaron and his sons and tell them that this is how you are to bless the people of Israel. You are to say to them, 'May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May Adonai lift up his face towards you and give you peace.'" And he said, "In this way they are to put my name on the people of Israel so that I will bless them." And thus as a nation, Adonai would provide land for them to reside, in that the entire earth belongs to God. Psalm 24, 1 and 2. "The earth is Adonai's with all that is in it, the world and those who live there. For he set its foundations on the seas and established it on the rivers." For he would convey through Moses, as they were coming to the land the first time, Adonai said to Moses, "Send men on your behalf and reconnoiter the land, which I am giving to the people of Israel. From each ancestral tribe, send someone who is a leader in his tribe." Moses dispatched them from the Paran Desert, as Adonai had ordered. All of them were leading men among the people of Israel. Now consider this from Deuteronomy, chapter 1, starting in verse 21. "Look, Adonai your God has placed the land before you. Go up, take possession, as Adonai, the God of your ancestors, has told you. Don't be afraid, don't be dismayed." Then verse 22, not found in the previous account in Numbers. "You approached me, every one of you, and said, 'Let's send men ahead of us to explore the country for us and bring back word concerning what we should use in going up and what cities we will encounter and what they are like.' The idea seemed good to me. So I took 12 of your men, one from each tribe, and they set out, went up to the hills, came to the Eshkol Valley and reconnoitered it." So in this parallel account, we learn that it was the people who wanted to reconnoiter the land. Yet in Numbers, it is implied that it was Adonai's idea, while the account in Deuteronomy implies that it was the people's idea. Is there a conflict? Consider that a parallel account of a single event does not have to line up exactly. For we have seen this in the Gospels. We've seen it in Kings and Chronicles, where details are left out of one account while present in another. We should stop looking at this as a contradiction and start looking at it as more information being revealed. So how do we reconcile this not so small discrepancy? One may look at it this way. The Numbers account, the Bamidbar account, is leaving out part of the story that would go at the beginning of Numbers 13. Adonai saved the detail of the people approaching Moses for this latter account, revealing that he did not stop them from what they were about to do, yet gave them permission by sending them. Ultimately, they would come to learn, and we would come to understand. In Deuteronomy 1, 25 and 26, they took some of the produce of the land and brought it down to us. They also brought back word to us, "The land Adonai our God is giving us is good. But you would not go up. Instead, you rebelled against the order of Adonai your God." Ultimately, what do we learn here? But they did not truly trust in Adonai, nor the vision he had for his people, allowing them to go and do as they had suggested by Moses, revealed their true lack of trust in Adonai. when we don't fully trust in him, nor the vision he has revealed. We tend to take matters into our own hands. We see this through the rejection of the people who spied out the land and brought forth a negative report when Adonai had already given them the land. In Numbers 13, 31 through 33, but the men who had gone with him said, "We can't attack those people because they are stronger than we are." And they spread a negative report about the land they had reconnoitered for the people of Israel by saying, "The land we pass through in order to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. All the people we saw there were giant. We saw the Nephilim, the descendants of Anak, who was from Nephilim. To ourselves we looked like grasshoppers by comparison, and we looked that way to them too." Thus resulting in the people being dejected and even more rebellious. At this, the people of Israel cried out in dismay and wept all night long. Moreover, all the people of Israel began grumbling against Moses and Aaron. The whole community told them, "We wish we had died in the land of Egypt, or that we had died in the desert. Why is Adonai bringing us to this land where we will die by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will be taken as booty. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "Let's appoint a leader and return to Egypt." So a negative report leads to even greater rebellion, ultimately leading to Adonai's appearance in verse 10 of Numbers 14. But just as the whole community were saying they should be stoned to death, the glory of Adonai appeared in the tent of meeting to all the people of Israel. Adonai said to Moses, "How much longer is this people going to treat me with contempt? How much longer will they not trust me, especially considering all the signs I have performed among them? I'm going to strike them with sickness, destroy them, and make from you a nation greater and stronger than they are." Yet Adonai would ultimately forgive them through Moses' intercession, where in verse 17, he says, "So please, Adonai, let Adonai's power be as great as when you said that Adonai is slow to anger, rich in grace, forgiving offenses and crimes, yet not exonerating the guilty, but causing the negative effects of the parents' offenses to be experienced by the children and even to the third and fourth generation." Where he says, "Please forgive the offense of this people according to the greatness of your grace, just as you have borne with this people from Egypt until now." Adonai answered, "I have forgiven as you have asked." For upon Adonai's forgiveness, the people felt great remorse and believe they were given a second chance of taking the land. Where in verse 39, when Moses told them these things to all the people of Israel, the people felt great remorse. They arose early the next morning, came up to the top of the mountain and said, "Here we are, and we did sin, but now we'll go up to the place Adonai promised." Moses answered, "Why are you opposing what Adonai said? You won't succeed. Don't go up there because Adonai isn't with you. If you do, your enemies will defeat you." But they were really only taking matters into their own hands, for they did not rely on Adonai before, and he would not be with them in this battle. For Adonai knew his people and spoke in relation to the events that had transpired previously. In Deuteronomy 2, "Finally, Adonai said to me, 'You have been going around the mountain long enough. Head north and give this order to the people. You are to pass through the territory of your kinsmen, the descendants of Esau, who live in Seir. They will be afraid of you, So be very cautious. And don't get into disputes with them. For I am not going to give you any of their land. No, not even enough for one foot to stand on, inasmuch as I have given Mount Seir to Esau as his possession. I am not giving you this land, so don't even think about it, is what God is saying. Are they trying to do things in their own power? Well, okay, we blew this opportunity. Well, we can take them. I believe God is, in essence, going ahead of them, because it occurs a second time. In verse 17, Adonai said to me, today you are to cross the border of Moab at Ar. When you approach the descendants of Amnon, don't bother them or fight with them, for I will not give you any of the territory of the people of Amnon to possess, since I have given it to the descendants of Lot as their territory. So Adonai has instructed Moses to go, yet not to encounter the inhabitants of the lands they were passing through. Do not engage them in battle, for this land belongs to the descendants of Lot and the descendants of Esau. How many times have you taken matters into your own hands, not relying on Adonai in advance, not trusting in him, not embracing the vision he has revealed through his word? Adonai had a vision for Abraham's descendants, and he had revealed it to them. Yet they did not always trust in him. For the legacy of Israel and their lack of trust in Adonai is seen every year on Tisha B'Av, which begins tonight. A day of fasting and mourning, a day of remembering tragedy rather than rejoicing in Adonai's promise. It is on this day that we are to fast and mourn in remembrance of the destruction of the first and second temples. The first temple of 586 BCE and the second temple 70 of the Common Era. Jewish people throughout the world see this day as one of the most tragic days in Jewish history. In addition to the temple's destruction, not once but twice, many horrific things have happened to the Jewish people on or around this date. You have the Bar Kokhba revolt of 132 to 135, where 100,000 Jews were killed. You have the Crusades of 1095, where Pope Urban II killed 10,000 Jews in the first month and destroyed Jewish communities in France and the Rhineland, or France and Germany of today. 1290, Jews were expelled from England by official decree. 1492, Jews were expelled from Spain, causing one of the greatest upheavals in Jewish history due to the success of their community. 1496, Jews were expelled from Portugal. 1555, Jews were forced into ghettos for the first time in Rome. 1914, World War I began, causing devastation across Europe and leading to World War II. And then 1941, Reinhard Heydrich was ordered to enact the final solution on July 31st. The next day was Tisha B'Av. You had the deportations from the Warsaw Ghetto to Treblinka that began on that day. And then in 1994, you have the bombing of the AMIA and the Jewish Community Center in Buenos Aires that killed 86. Yet that's a legacy that we have today. Yet I am reminded of this. Psalm 139, for you fashioned my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I thank you because I am awesomely made, wonderfully. Your works are wonders. I know this very well. My bones were not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes could see me as an embryo. But in your book, all my days were already written. My days have been shaped before any of them existed. For Adonai did not establish this nation to perish, nor did he create you to wallow. even in the midst of captivity, after judgment. Adonai remembered Israel in Jeremiah 29. For here is what Adonai says, after Babel, 70 years are over. I will remember you and fulfill my good promise to you by bringing you back to this place. For I know what plans I have in mind for you, says Adonai. Plans for well-being, not for bad things, so that you can have hope and a future. When you call to me and pray to me, I will listen to you. The people will not perish at the hand of Adonai, but will fulfill the vision of Adonai. In Jeremiah 31:35, if these laws leave my presence, says Adonai, then the offspring of Israel will stop being a nation in my presence forever. That is what Adonai says, if the sky above can be measured and the foundation of the earth be fathomed, then I will reject all the offspring of Israel for all that they have done, says Adonai. Nobody has taken a yardstick or a ruler to the universe. Nobody has been able to count the number of stars that exist. For Yeshua affirms this very aspect through the parable of the fig tree. Now let the fig tree teach you its lesson. When its branches begin to sprout and leaves appear, you know that summer is approaching. In the same way, when you see all these things, you are to know that the time is near, right at the door. Yes, I tell you that this people will certainly not pass away before all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. God's vision has been revealed, yet his words will not pass away. And this people that Yeshua is talking about are the Jewish people, because he's talking about his return. He had previously chastised the leaders in chapter 23. And he said that they would not see him again until they said, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. For the legacy that exists was not part of Adonai's vision. This legacy of grief and mourning on this day, the many calamities that have occurred. For Adonai's vision for his people, for he conveys further through the prophet Zechariah. This word of Adonai came to me. Adonai says, the fast days of the 4th, 5th, 7th, and 10th month are to become times of joy, gladness, and cheer for the house of Judah. Therefore, love truth and peace. So this grieving that goes on this day of Tisha B'Av, which is one of those months, is not intended. It is not part of God's vision for a nation. But they've taken matters into their own hand. And thus they should be considered times of joy because of the chazon, the vision of Adonai, in that he would be the redeemer of his people, not to mention the redeemer of the world. So as I close, I want to share Psalm 27 with you, because I believe it offers guidance and I believe it offers hope for us as believers, but also for the nation. Adonai is my light and salvation. Whom do I need to fear? Adonai is the stronghold of my life. Of whom should I be afraid? When evildoers assailed me to devour my flesh, my adversaries and foes, they stumbled and fell. If an army encamps against me, my heart will not fear. If war breaks out against me, even then I will keep trusting. Just one thing have I asked of Adonai. Only this will I seek: to live in the house of Adonai all the days of my life, to see the beauty of Adonai and visit in his temple. For he will conceal me in his shelter on the day of trouble. He will hide me in the folds of his tent. He will set me high on a rock. Then my head will be lifted up above my surrounding foes. And I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing praises to Adonai. Listen, Adonai, to my voice when I cry. Show favor to me and answer me. My heart said to you, seek my face. Your face, Adonai, I will seek. Do not hide your face from me. Don't turn your servant away in anger. You are my help. Don't abandon me. Don't leave me, God, my Savior. Even though my father and mother have left me, Adonai will care for me. Teach me your way. Adonai, lead me on a level path because of my enemies. Don't give me up to the whims of my foes, for false witnesses have risen against me. Also those who are breathing violence. If I hadn't believed that I would see Adonai's goodness in the land of the living, put your hope in Adonai, be strong, and let your heart take courage. Yes, put your hope in him. These are the words of David, one who was pursued by many enemies. Yet in spite of everything, he trusted in Adonai in all things. So without a prophetic vision, the people throw off all restraint. But he who keeps Torah is happy. Prophetic vision begins in Torah, for Adonai revealed a vision of a people who would become his nation. And through his nation, Adonai would redeem the world. For Yeshua conveys this about us in John 17. Keeping in mind we weren't there, but we are his followers, and therefore this applies to us today. I have given them your word, and the world hated them, because they do not belong to the world, just as I myself do not belong to the world. I don't ask you to take them out of the world, but to protect them from the evil one. They do not belong to the world, just as I do not belong to the world. And then finally he said, set them apart for holiness by means of the truth. And then he conveys, your word is truth. Ultimately, it's his word that guides us and protects us. It's his word that empowers us. And it's through his spirit that all these things come together. So embrace the vision that Adonai revealed, and thus be restrained, because true joy is experienced by those who keep Torah. Restrain meaning don't let yourself become unrestrained and do whatever your heart so desires, but be restrained by God's word, letting his word guide you, letting the spirit residing in you be your guide, and ultimately testing any spirit that may whisper in your ear something that sounds too good to be true. So keep these things in mind, for God has revealed his vision to you. And the vision is found in Torah, which is where life resides. These truths are self-evident. And no, I'm not going to go into our founding documents, but keeping in mind, before our founding documents, these evidence were self-evident. So keep these things in mind. Embrace God's vision. Embrace God's promise, because that's probably what I'm talking about next week. Because not only is there vision that leads to life in Torah, but there are promises that lead to life that are found in Torah. So we will likely be there next Shabbat. So if everybody would please rise.